There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Welcome to College Football Live.
I'll be attending University of LSU.
I'm going to Stanford University.
I'll be furthering my academic and athletic career at Louisiana State University.
The Ohio State University.
To the University of South Carolina.
Oregon.
Those are just some of the sights and sounds from the early signing period, and it's not done yet. But right now, with the hay that is currently in the barn, Clemson trying to lock up its first ever number one recruiting class. Alabama sitting there at number two. Combined, they have combined for the 10% of the ESPN 300. You see Ohio State, LSU, and Georgia. Matt Schick, Tom Luganville, National Recruiting Director, and Jim Moore, former UCLA head coach and also the NFL. We spent about 5 hours together. What's a half hour more today? We saw on that full screen graphic some of the winning programs today. Let's start with Clemson.
Sure.
Number one overall class. What stands out to you?
Well, never had the number one overall class. Yep. So obviously the results on the field has certainly been helping the Tigers and building what they've put together under Dabo Swinney's tenure. But it's really about the defensive linemen, guys. I mean, if you look at how this championship roster has been built, it's been built from the inside out. This is all one collective class now. You got Mitchell Mays there in the offensive line. DeMarcus Bowen, they're going to need some additions at running back. Look at those defensive linemen. They're all in the top five at their respective position nationally, and this has become a destination for defensive front people, which are not growing on trees, coach, as you know, and they're collecting them.
And those are impact players, and they're hard to find, the good ones. You're adding to an already great defense. You know, the best scoring defense in the country this year. And, you know, big guys in this game can never be overestimated. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to find impact big time big guys.
Yeah.
And they're collecting them on defense.
Yeah.
I had a four-star safety, Malcolm Green, flipped him from LSU out of the state of Virginia. So Clemson, a big winner there. Speaking of LSU, yeah, they may have lost a recruit or two, but they certainly made up for it on signing.
You know what? You can't lament about the guys you lose. And so I look at LSU and I like what they've done. I think they had a heck of a day, and it starts with the tight end. When you're talking about Eric Gilbert, okay? 6'5", 255, and he moves like a wide receiver.
Yeah.
He's so athletic and so fluid. And then you pick up two outside linebackers, and Webb and Sampa, and those are impact players. You get a big-time corner who's got some length. And then I jump down, I look at Dumervil, and I see an offensive tackle that's got length, and he's got really good feet. He's going to develop. He's going to get bigger and stronger in their weight program. And then they added a couple of good receivers as well. So I think it's a really good class that Ed's put together, you know, on the heels of a tremendous season so far. And great recruiter, great recruiting staff.
Capitalizing on the momentum, as you put it, of a great year, and then coming into the day and still had some guys left on the board. Guys like Marcus Dumervil, guys like Phillip Webb, who committed today.
Yeah.
And that's big because you've already got this group together that has been with you, maybe even before the season, which became special, actually occurred. So now how do you use the season to try and finish things out? It's been very strong for the Tigers.
Yeah, an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Premium position.
Absolutely.
Get a big, long-arm guy. I mean, you cannot overestimate that.
You mentioned him, Marcus Dumervil, top 10 offensive tackle. He is the nephew of Elvis Dumervil, who played at Louisville. Speaking of Louisville, they thought they were going to have quarterback Chubba Purdy, who's the brother of Iowa State quarterback Brock Purdy. But Chubba, the last minute, says, you know what? Took a visit to Florida State. Flips to Florida State and Mike Norvell. The Noles and Mike Norvell, certainly a winner, although they're not in the top 20 of the class rankings.
Yeah, Mike Norvell, scheme and need. And there's a lot to sell if you're Florida State, and they haven't signed a quarterback in two classes. So in short order, very, very quick amount of time, we are seeing Florida State do something very, very positive for their program. Listen, Florida State needs some good things to happen. Mm-hmm. They haven't had a lot of positives lately,
well,
right?
Hiring Mike Norvell was a good thing.
Sure.
And then what he did in flipping Chubba Purdy, that's a good thing. They've got a lot of talent there.
Yeah.
They do need a guy that can pull the trigger in that offense, and I think that they've got one.
Safety to Darius McKnight going to help certainly on the back end.
And Brian Robinson was added today.
That's right.
Yeah.
And again, that short window that those new coaches have, a week to 10 days, you'll take any positive momentum that you can get.
Quarterback. Yeah. I mean, such a need position. To your point about defensive linemen, quarterbacks aren't growing on trees either. Mm-hmm. And for a program that is just in such dire need of upgrade in production, upgrade in talent and numbers, Mike Norvell hit it out of the park today.
We had some pretty interesting moments on our National Signing Day coverage, but one of the more memorable happened at Dallas Jesuit Prep College there in Dallas, in Texas, home to Emmitt Smith, of course, the nation's all-time leading rusher. Well, his son, E.J. Smith, had a choice to make, whether it was going to be Florida, where Emmitt went to school, or Texas A&M, or Stanford. He winds up picking Stanford, and I asked Emmitt Smith after the announcement of his son the advice that he gave him.
You know, I'm going to take this hat. I'm going to wear this hat. But I can wear this hat. He doesn't have to wear this hat. You know, his daddy went here. That doesn't mean that my son has to go there. At the end of the day, my son has his own journey, and it is his journey, not my journey. And for him to do the things that is best for him is what we teach all of our children, to find what is best for you and go make it happen for yourself. And I'm proud of him for standing up and being the man that he is, the man that he will continue to become. And I'm a Gator. He's still a Gator because he's in my family.
And that's,
my wife is a Gator because she's in our family. So we're still family of Gators, but we're supporting not only EJ, we support Skylar, we support Jasmine, we support Reagan and Elijah, all of our children, no matter where they go. We're going to be parents first, then we can fall in with our kids, fall in second.
We're all dads if we could all follow that advice. I mean, that's just great.
I thought it was, you gave everything just the perfect perspective. It's about the journey. It's about supporting the kid. You know, Emmitt obviously has lived this life. He understands this life. He's seen the highs. He's seen the lows. And he's trying to put his son on the best possible path for success on and off the field. And if he just follows his dad's words, his wisdom, as we all do, I think that our kids will turn out okay.
It's got to be hard enough being Emmitt Smith's son, right? Yeah. I mean, that standard, that expectation that everybody's expecting you to live up to. And essentially what he's saying is, EJ is EJ. I'm Emmitt.
Yeah, he relieved the pressure.
Absolutely. Took it right off of his shoulders. I loved it.
And he's probably done that his whole life.
Yeah.
You know? We just got to see it.
Yeah, Emmitt James IV, I'm going to go by EJ, but you can't escape your dad's shadow. He casts a big one, but he's allowing his kid to live his own life, make his own decisions. And that was very, very well done today on our National Signing Day coverage. Elsewhere, look, you see Oregon, they had a good day. Elsewhere in the Pac-12, USC has some work to do. And the reason being, you look at Upland, California, Upland High School, we saw Justin Flo, top 10 prospect, outside linebacker, says, you know what, I'm leaving the state and I'm going to Oregon. How does USC handle that?
Well, they got to deal with it, but it's not just him, Coach. I mean, Justin Flo, as you see right there, he's a human missile. I mean, this kid can run, he can strike, he's got great range, plays with passion, loves the game, really nice motor on this young man. And again, a Southern California kid, Inland Empire kid, that's SC territory, SC history.
Well, you know, you saw it last year with Kayvon Thibodeau, and then you see it here with Flo. Those kids used to go to USC.
Right.
They just automatically went to USC.
Right.
You could recruit them, and they'd string you along, but they went to SC. But I think that the indecision with Clay all year had a real effect on this class. And then really the lack of a firm commitment to his future beyond this year.
That's what stood out to me.
Well, I think that's going to continue to have an impact on the next year's class.
Right.
Now, hopefully they get off to a great start. They've got a tremendous young quarterback.
Yeah.
But they've got to be able to get those great defensive linemen that they used to get, and they need to address the offensive line, and that's getting more and more difficult, as you know, on the West Coast.
Yeah, and there's just not a lot of big guys, not a lot of trench players, certainly not in significant numbers. Yeah. But it used to be in the old days, you know, if SC wanted a guy and he was a great player,
they got him,
all right? And the rest of the conference knew it. You were playing second, all right? And I feel for Clay because, you know, kids don't want uncertainty and they don't want instability. And by committing to him for next year, what does that tell the current class, to your point with what took place during the year? It was a tumultuous up and down year, and there was a lot of uncertainty surrounding him. But then what does it say also about the 2021 class? Now, they got some time to sit back and see how it plays out. The 2020 class, those kids don't have that luxury.
No, it had to happen really quick. Yeah. And, you know, the decision on Clay was kind of held a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was an immediate decision. So it all compounded into this, you know, really disappointing class.
And you saw the graphic there with the exodus. None of the top 15 players within the state of California are staying in state.
Right.
So it just continues, and we'll see if USC and other schools in the state can keep that from happening. USC headed into the postseason. Let's take a look at our Progressive Bowl Challenge Cup. A different conference has had the best record of bowl season each of the last 4 years. Conference USA won the cup last year for the fourth time, tying with them with the Mountain West for most Challenge Cups won. Up next, that first year in recruiting can be a tight squeeze, but what about second-year coaches? We'll evaluate and assess what they did on National Signing Day.
College Football Live is brought to you by Allstate, reminding you that football season is mayhem.
Friday, bowl season begins. Buffalo takes on Charlotte in the Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl at 2 Eastern, then at 7:30 on ESPN2, Utah State and Kent State. Mountain West versus the MAC and the Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl. Both games also live on the ESPN app, so you can watch anywhere. Let's take a look at our Capital One Bowl Mania preview. Going to the islands, Makers Wanted Bahamas Bowl between Buffalo and Charlotte. Charlotte in a bowl game for the first time as an FBS program, and while they match up similar offensively to Buffalo, turnover and defense certainly favoring the Bulls. There are a bunch of second-year coaches that have advanced to the bowl season in terms of the FBS. Mack Brown is in there. Scott Satterfield, after his first year. What classes that we saw on National Signing Day for second-year coaches stood out to you the most?
I think Mack Brown's class was very impressive. And having a full calendar year with his staff, get reinstituted with the area coaches in the state. North Carolina, it's such a tough state because you've got great players, but it's oversaturated with universities. Now you've got four Power Five schools within an hour of each other. You've got great Group of Five programs, but the high school football is really good. So the goal is to keep your best players at home. He started that off by keeping two premier defensive ends, in-state kids, in Chapel Hill. And that's the goal. They're upgrading facilities. They've upgraded their practice facility, got a quarterback. This is a class I think shows significant improvement.
I agree with you. And watching Mack dance, you can see why those kids want to play for him. You know, I quietly like what Mel Tucker's doing at Colorado. Now, their class is ranked 31st, so that's not going to, you know, open anyone's eyes. But I look at what Mario Cristobal did at Oregon, mm-hmm. bringing that SEC attitude. And then I look at Colorado, what Mel Tucker's doing coming from the SEC. And I think they're a team that's on the verge of really starting to make some noise mm-hmm. in the Pac-12 South. Now they have to contend with Arizona State, who's doing a nice job as well. But I like the direction they're headed. They've got really nice facilities. Some challenges, you know, trying to go into Texas and win, trying to go into California and win. Colorado's not a state that just has an abundance of big-time talent.
Yeah, the state's the late 80s anymore when they're just dipping into California and all these different spots.
They have to hit the transfer portal as well. Yeah. Antonio Alfano, who was top defensive tackle in last year's class, mm-hmm. to get him from Alabama after a transfer again. Coaches like Mel Tucker, it's their second recruiting class, first full class, coming off their mm-hmm. first full season as a head coach. Let's get to Georgia Tech and Jeff Collins. Think about a program overhaul that he's had to do. He's looking at a top 25 class.
He is. Biggest roster overhaul that you've probably seen in the last 40, 50 years of college football. But he's doing it by identifying front players on both sides of the ball, length at corner, two corners in this class that stand at 6'1" or taller, and they surprisingly nab the quarterback, Jeff Sims, out of Florida, formerly committed to Florida State. This is a really important get for Georgia Tech going forward.
It's going to be interesting to see how Georgia Tech continues to navigate that. Again, fixing that offense, changing it, the overhaul from Paul Johnson and the triple option attack. We do have some sad news to pass along here on College Football Live. Iowa coaching great Hayden Fry died Tuesday after a lengthy battle with cancer. He was 90 years old. At the time of his retirement, he was the winningest coach in football and program history with 143 wins. He led the Hawkeyes to 3 Big Ten titles and 14 bowl appearances, including 3 in the Rose Bowl. So pretty remarkable accomplishments there for Hayden Fry. 1985, a part of the Big Ten's first ever AP number 1 versus number 2 game when his first-ranked Hawkeyes beat Bo Schembechler's second-ranked Wolverines 12-10. All his efforts in the game landed him a spot in the College Football Hall of Fame in 2003. Our own Zubin Mehenti shares a classic Hayden Fry story.
So if you ever look back at an Iowa helmet in the 1980s when they were amazing, their head coach was Hayden Fry, there's a little decal on the back of the helmet. And it had the words A-N-F on the back. America needs farmers. In the 1980s, farming was in a huge crisis in the country, and Iowa was born of farmers. But really, Iowa needed Fry, and I'll give you a great example. Legendary game 1985. They're playing Bo Schembechler and Michigan. Before the game, Coach Fry goes over to his long snapper, and I want you to spray it all over the place. And he said, Coach, what? He goes, I don't want you to directly take the snap and hit the punter in warm-ups. I want you to spray it all over the place. And he goes, Coach, you sure about that? I'm sure about that. You just do that, boy. And he did it. And Bo goes over and goes, Hayden, I notice your punter's spraying it all over the field back there. Your snapper and your punter can't get it together. Hayden, who was a psychology major, looked at Bo and simply said, don't worry, Bo. We don't plan on punting today.
Oh, that's great stuff.
That's why the visiting locker room's pink.
Mind games.
Mind games.
You know, we were showing the B-roll of him, and he was the Rose from 1982 Rose Bowl. I was a player at the University of Washington.
It was Chuck Long.
Against him, yeah. And, you know, he was one of those guys as a football coach, he just respect for his integrity, his class, his commitment to the game and the young men that play it. And I think that the toughness and integrity and all those things that he brought to the game. So, you know, our prayers with him, with his family.
Sustaining a program, building a program is one thing, keeping it going for a long period of time, very, very difficult. And in an era where we're not going to see a lot of that anymore, that was what made him special.
You just think about the legacy, his legacy lives on through his coaching tree. Oh. I mean, the Stoops family,
right.
Brett Bielema, Kirk Ferentz, Barry Alvarez, all of those. Our thoughts and prayers certainly with the family. Not just the Fry family, but also the Iowa football family, as they mourn the loss of their legendary coach, Hayden Fry, who was 90 years old.
College Football Live is brought to you by Residence Inn, Element Hotels, and Town Place Suites. Room for possibility. And AT&T.
Penultimate weekend of the NFL regular season gets capped off with Packers-Vikings on Monday Night Football, 8 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Oklahoma's going to be without at least 3 players for its college football playoff semifinal game against LSU at the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl because of suspensions. Wasn't immediately clear if the players, starting defensive end Ronnie Perkins, running back Ramondre Stevenson, and receiver Trajan Bridges will also miss the national championship on January 13th. We shall see if Oklahoma's even participating in that. They'll have to get through LSU to do that. It's Ohio State and Clemson in the other national semifinal on ESPN and also streaming live on the ESPN app. 3 of the 4 teams have transfer quarterbacks there. How have you seen the transfer portal have an impact on National Signing Day?
Well, it's become a normal part of the evaluation process. You're recruiting the transfer portal and evaluating it no differently than you would the high school player, the junior college player. And, you know, so much so that now programs are starting to say, you know what? I don't know if I want to take the third guy on the board. I might hold one of these for later on in the spring and summer and see if we can improve our football team in another way.
Yeah, because some really good players are becoming available to you. And if they can come in with some maturity and the ability to start right away, boy, that's a bonus. Mm-hmm.
The roster management, you guys talk about it all the time. It's just another facet of the roster management aspect that you have to monitor.
Right, and really you have to have people on your staff that are devoted to it and committed to it every day because it is so complex. You have to see who's out there, who's available. You have to anticipate who may leave early from your team, who may be deciding to transfer. You have to worry about medical disqualifications, all of those types of things. So it's become a lot more complex, and you're always, as I say, you're massaging your numbers, sure. massaging your team.
Well, keep in mind with the transfer portal, you've got to deal with the APR. You've got to deal with initial counters. We have blue shirting. We have gray shirting. We have players counting forward a class, players counting towards the current class, and managing all those numbers within your 85 structure.
Hire the right people who know all that stuff.
And a lot of them.
It's a little bit more complex than just showing up on signing day and signing 25 guys. There's a little bit more that goes into it.
Well, some of the guys that were signed on National Signing Day, and again, the late signing period coming up in February, are going to make an immediate impact in college football. We saw a bunch of those last year. How about guys coming up in the college football playoff? Derek Stingley, Jr. We saw Jaden Daniels and what he did with Arizona State. Bo Nix at Auburn. Kayvon Thibodeau was the number one player in the ESPN 300 just a year ago. We saw him wreak havoc on opposing offenses in the Pac-12. And Sam Howell was a flip from Florida State to North Carolina, essentially on National Signing Day. A big coup for Mack Brown with that in-state product from Sun Valley High School in Indian Trail, North Carolina. And there they are. So give us some names that next year will be on a graphic just like that.
I'm going to give you two for North Carolina. If you're going to compete with Clemson, you better get some defensive linemen, right? Desmond Evans and Miles Murphy, the two down linemen, top two rated players on North Carolina's roster, coming into next year off of a bowl season at a need position. Because to make an impact as a freshman, not only do you got to be good enough, there needs to be an area where there's a need for you.
I think Bryce Young, from modern day high school going to Alabama, could have an immediate impact. I think that he's a guy that's got the maturity, he's got the skill set, he's got the football intelligence to go in and be an impact player there. You don't have to do a lot at Alabama. Just get it to those receivers or pitch it back to they get great running back, and you can be a heck of a productive
player. Throw the slant off the RPO, you're good.
Just think about Bryce Young, another one of those guys from California that migrated east. You see Justin Flo head to Oregon. Yeah. DJ Ugalele.
There you go.
Ugalele.
We just call him, when you recruit him, you just call him DJ.
DJ, that's it. DJ. That's all you have to call him. He's going from the state of California out to Clemson as their top-rated quarterback. Speaking of going, you got to get out of here.
I do.
We've had enough.
I got to leave the
ACC program. Network wants you.
I'm entering the transfer portal to another studio.
Transfer portal out of there. You'll be a gray shirt for us, I guess. I don't even know if that makes sense. College Football Live, ACC Network for Lukes.